This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. The goal on here is to make listeners aware of interesting companies, smart people, and new technology developments, all of them meaningful in making digital signage projects happen. I try to help listeners understand sometimes complicated subjects and why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but things happen now and then. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 69 has been around since 2006, and the publication and podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which provides customer engagement solutions for business. You can find them at spectrio.com. If you've been in the industry for a while, you'll maybe remember all the excitement around using gesture technology to control screens. It was followed by the letdown of how crappy and feeble those touchless working examples turned out to be. Like just about everything, the technology and the ideas have got a lot better with time. And there's a lot of renewed discussion about how camera sensors, AI, and related technologies can change up how consumers both interact and transact. UltraLeap is steadily developing a product that lets consumers interact with and experience digital displays using sensors and, when it makes sense, haptic feedback. The company was formed in 2019 when Ultra Haptics acquired Leap Motion, and the blended entity now operates out of both Silicon Valley and Bristol in the UK. Leap Motion was known for a little USB device and a lot of code that could interpret hand gestures in front of a screen as commands, while Ultra Haptics used ultrasound to project tactile sensations directly onto a user's hands, so you could feel a response and controls that weren't really there, or something like that. It's complicated stuff. I had an interesting chat with Saurabh Gupta, who is charged with developing and driving a product aimed at the digital out-of-home market, one of many UltraLeap is chasing. We got into a bunch of things, from how the tech works to why brands and venues would opt for touchless when touchscreens are so commonplace, as is hand sanitizer. Hey Saurabh, thank you for joining me. Let's get this out of the way. What is UltraLeap and how did it come about?
Hey Dave, nice to be here. Thank you for having me. So look, UltraLeap is a technology company and our mission is to deliver solutions that remove the boundaries between physical and digital worlds. We have two main technologies. We have a computer vision-based hand tracking and gesture recognition technology that we acquired. And the other side of the equation, we have mid-air haptic technology using ultrasound. The whole premise of how we came about was we started out as a haptics company. And that's what, you know, our founder and CEO, Tom Carter, built when he was in college. And it was a breakthrough idea that for us to be able to deliver the sense of touch in mid-air using ultrasound was how we started. And to be able to project haptic sensations in mid-air, one of the key components of that was, hey, you need to understand where the hands are in space. And for that, we were using a computer vision technology by Leap Motion to track and locate users' hands in space. Mm-hmm. And we had an opportunity to make an acquisition. And as you know, some of your listeners may already know about Leap Motion. Leap Motion, has been a pioneer in gesture-based hand tracking technology since 2010. They've got 10 plus years of pedigree in really refining gesture-based hand tracking models. So we had an opportunity to procure or to purchase them, make an acquisition in 2019. We completed the acquisition and rebranded ourselves to UltraLeap. So that's how we started. And our, as I stated, our mission, it's all about focusing on user experience for the use cases of how people are or users are interacting with their environment. And that environment could be, a sort of a 2D screen in certain applications, the applications that we'll probably talk about today, but also other aspects of, hey, augmented reality and virtual reality, which are in the on the horizon and are emerging technologies that are gaining more ground. So it's that's the central approach. How can we enhance the interactivity that users have with their physical environment through an input and an output sort of technology offerings with gesture as input and haptics being the output?
The whole gesture thing through the years has been a kind of an interesting journey, so to speak, in that I can remember some of the early iterations of Microsoft's Kinect gesture sensors and display companies and solutions providers doing demos showing, look, you can control a screen by waving your hand, lifting it up and down and this and that. And I thought, this is not going to go anywhere. It's just too complicated. There's too much of a learning curve and everything else. Mm-hmm. Now, the idea as it's evolved and like all technology got a lot better is it's more intuitive, but it's still something of a challenge, right? There's still a bit of a curve because we're now conditioned to touching screens.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It's absolutely, one of the key aspects here is gesture's been around. I mean, there's been research that goes back to, the early 90s, if not in the 80s. But computer vision technology in general has come a long way. The deep learning models that are powering our hand tracking technology today are absolutely a lot more sophisticated. They are more robust. They are more adaptable. And they are able to train based on a lot of real world inputs. So what that really means is that since the computing power and the technology behind recognizing gestures has improved, a lot of that has manifested itself in a more approachable user experience, right? And I completely accept the fact that there is a gap. And we've got 10 plus years of learned behavior of using a touchscreen. We use a touchscreen every day, carry it in our pockets. Mm-hmm. But you also have to understand that when touchscreens became prevalent, there was the typed keyboard before that, right? Mm-hmm. So the point that I'm making here with this is that we are pushing the envelope on new technologies and a new paradigm of interactivity. Yes, there is a learning curve, but those are the things that we are actually actively solving for. Number one is the gesture tracking technology should be so refined that it is inclusive and is able to perform in any environment. So that's number one. And I think we've done we've made some really good steps towards that. You may have heard of our recent announcement of our latest hand tracking offering called Gemini, our latest mm-hmm. platform. Mm-hmm. The fundamental thing with Gemini is it's based on years and years of research and analysis on making the computer vision deep learning models that power that platform to be as robust, to be low latency, high yield in terms of productivity, and really, really high initialization, which means as part of the user experience, when you walk up to an interface, you expect to use it right away, mm-hmm. right? We know we can do that with touchscreens, but if you put this technology complementary to an interface, what we are solving for at UltraLeap is, number one, when somebody walks up to a screen and they put up their hand to start to interact, the computer vision technology should instantly recognize that there is a person who's looking to interact. That's number one. And I think with Gemini, with the deep model work that we've done, we've made some good progress there. Number two, which is once the technology recognizes that a person wants to interact, now can we make it more intuitive for the person to be as or more productive than she would be with a touchscreen interface? And that's where I think we've made more progress. I will say that we need to make more progress there, but some of the things that we've done, Dave, is we have this thing called Call to Interact, which is a video tutorial, attract loop. That is serves as an education piece. And I'll give you a stat. We ran a really large study, public pilot in the Pacific Northwest at an airport. And the use case there was immigration check-in. So, people coming off the plane, before they go talk to a border security agent, they need to, some people can fill out their information on a kiosk. So we outfitted some kiosks with our gesture-based technology, and the rest were the control, which were all touchscreen-based. Over multiple weeks, we ran this study with active consumers who actually had no prior, safe to assume that they had very little to no prior experience using gesture. And we did this A-B test where we, measured the gesture adoption rate on the kiosks without a call to interact, before the call to interact and after the call to interact, and it increased the gesture adoption rate by 30%, which means that it certainly is helping people to understand how to use the interface. The second stat that came from it, that at the end of the pilot, we were almost at 65% gesture adoption rate, which means almost more than 6 out of 10 people who use that interface use gesture as the dominant interface for input control. And the third piece of this was, how long did it take for them to finish their session, right? We measured that using the gesture-based interaction, yes, the time was slightly higher than for the control group that was using a touchscreen, but it wasn't much. It was 10%, only 10% higher. Hmm. Now, one can look at that stat and say, in a transactional setting where, it's going to take you 30 seconds to order a burger, adding an extra second, right?
That's a problem.
That's a problem. But at the same time, those stats are encouraging for us to think about when we, look at that as the baseline to improve from.
So if I'm listening to this and I'm trying to wrap my head around what's going on here, this is not gesture where you're standing, 3 feet away from a screen and doing the Tom Cruise Minority Report thing where you're, waving your arm and doing this and that. This is, can you describe it? Because you're basically doing touch-like interactions, and the ultrasonic jets or blasts of air or whatever are giving you the feedback to kind of guide you, right?
Yeah, so we haven't really layered in. So we've got two sort of avenues that we are going at this from. One is we are for the self-service type offering. So you think of check-in kiosks or ordering kiosks at restaurants or even digital wayfinding, digital directories. We are solving for those primarily led, at least in the first phase, led by our gesture tracking technology. So gesture being the input modality, complementary to touch. So what we do is we built a touch-free application which is a ready-to-use application that is available today on Windows-based media players or systems to convert existing touchscreen-based user interfaces to gesture. Mm-hmm. But what we've done is we've made the transition a lot more intuitive and easier, because what we've done is we've replicated and done a lot of research on this and replicated interaction methods or gestures, you would call it. I hate to use gesture as a word because it gets tagged with,
right,
weird hand poses and things like that, people pinching and all of that. Mm-hmm. For us, it's all about how can we replicate the same usage model that a typical average consumer will have when she interacts with a touchscreen-based interface. And so we came up with this, an interaction method that we call AirPush. AirPush is basically how, to explain it to your listeners, it's all about using your finger and moving towards an interactive element on screen. But what the magic that happens is the button gets pressed even before you approach the screen based on your forward motion or interaction. Mm-hmm. Now, the way we, you know, the smart math behind all of this is that not only do we track motion, but we also track velocity, which means that for people who are, you know, who are aggressive in terms of their button pressing, which means they do short jabs, right? Mm-hmm. We can cater for those, or people who are more sort of, you know, careful in their approach as they move towards the screen. The system is adaptable to cater to all types of, you know, interaction types, and we track all the fingers, so you can use multiple fingers too, or different fingers as well. So these are some of the things that we've included in our application. So that's one side. The second side is all about, you know, interactive advertising, immersion. And that's where I think we use our haptic technology more to engage and involve the user in the interactive experience that they're going through. So for self-service and more transactional type use cases, we're using primarily our hand gesture technology. And for immersive experiential marketing, or even, you know, the digital out-of-home advertising type use cases, we are leading with our haptic-based technology.
Okay, and you're involved on the digital out-of-home side, right? Like, that's part of your charge?
That's correct. So I lead the Ultraleap's out-of-home business. So okay. In the out-of-home business, we have both self-service, retail, and digital out-of-home advertising businesses that we focus on.
So how would that manifest itself in terms of I'm at a train station, or I'm out somewhere, and there's a digital out-of-home display, and I go up and interact with it, and you're saying it's a more robust and rich experience than just like boinking away at a touchscreen. What's going on? Like, what would be a good example of that?
Yeah, so a good example of digital out-of-home activations that we've done is you may have heard of our partnership with CEN, Cinema Entertainment Network, where we've augmented, Ultraleap Technology has augmented some of their interactive in-cinema displays that are being sold from a programmatic perspective. Now, the interactive piece is still being worked into the programmatic side of things, but that's one example of, you know, an interactive experience in a place-based setting. The other example is, you know, experiential marketing activations that we've done with Skoda in retail malls, and also, you know, an activation that we did with Lego for Westfield. So these are some of the experiences that we've launched and, you know, released with our haptic technology. And on the self-service side, you know, we've been working with a lot of sort of, you know, providers in the space. You may have heard of our recent pilot that concluded with PepsiCo, where we are bringing in or trialing gesture for their ordering kiosks for their food and beverage partners. So these are some of the things that are going on both sides in the business.
So for, let's say for the Lego one or the Skoda one, what would a consumer experience?
So yeah, it's a good question. So these are all interactive experiences. So for Lego, it was about, you know, building a Lego together. So basically using our haptic technology, which obviously contains gesture as the input, moving Lego blocks and making an object. And that was being displayed on a really large LED screen at one of the retail outlets in London. So a user would walk up, they would, you know, use their hands in front of our haptic device to control the pieces on the screen and then join them together and make a Lego out of it. And so, and while they're doing that, they're getting the sensation of, you know, the tactile sensation of joining the pieces, and that all adds up to a really immersive, engaging experience within a digital out-of-home setting.
So you get the sensation that you're kind of snapping Lego pieces together?
Correct. Yeah, snapping pieces together, controlling, you get an you know, the agency of control, and it's one of those sensations that gives you a, you know, the memorability factor is very high. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether you track the news. This was in 2019. We did a really extensive pilot. I would call it pilot activation is a better phrase. Activation with Warner Brothers in LA. And what we did was at one of the cinemas down there for Warner Brothers' three upcoming movies, Shazam, Curse of La Llorona, and Detective Pikachu, we added interactive movie posters using haptics in the cinema lobby. And this would to kind of complement the digital poster network that was already existing at that location. And, you know, over the course of the activation, which was around 6 weeks long, we had almost 150,000 people that went through the cinema. And we actually did, you know, in partnership with QVidi, we did a lot of analytics around, you know, what the performance was of an interactive movie poster experience within a digital out of home setting, and got some really great stats. Like, you know, we measured conversion rate between, you know, an interactive experience versus a static digital signage experience. I mean, the conversion rate was almost 2x. 33% increase in dwell time, like people were spending more time in front of an interactive sign versus a static sign. Attention span was significantly higher, 75%, 43% lift in brand favorability. So these are really interesting stats that gave us the confidence that haptic technology combined with gesture-based interface has a lot of value in providing and delivering memorable experiences that people remember, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the whole point with advertising, right? That's the whole point. You want to present experiences that provide a positive association of your branded message with your target consumer. And we feel that our technology allows that connection to be made.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
One of the assumptions / expectations that happened when the pandemic broke out was that this was the end of touchscreens. Nobody's ever going to want to touch a screen again.
Right.
You know, the interactivity was dead. And yeah. I made a lot of those assumptions myself. And right. As it's turned out, the opposite has happened. The touchscreen manufacturers have had a couple of pretty good years. And the idea is a touchscreen you can wipe down and you can clean your hands and do all that stuff, but you're at far greater risk standing 4 feet away from somebody across the counter ordering a burger or a ticket or whatever it may be. So when you're speaking with solutions providers, end user customers, and so on, are you getting the question of, okay, why do I need to be touchless?
Yeah, it's a fair point, Dave. And let me clarify that. Look, we are, from our perspective, we are focusing on building the right technology and building the right solutions that elevate the user experience. Hygiene surely is part of that equation, but I accept your points on, look, there is far greater risks for germ transmission than shared surfaces. Fine, I totally accept that. And yes, there is a TCO argument, total cost of ownership argument that has to be made here also. The point that, you know, I will make here is that we fundamentally believe, and, you know, being a scale-up organization that is focusing on a new technology, we have to believe that. We have to believe that we are pushing the technology envelope, where what we are focusing on is elevating the user experience from what the current model provides. So yes, there will be some use cases where we are not a good fit, but contactless as a category or touchless as a category has maybe the pandemic catalyzed it, maybe it expedited things, but that category in itself is growing significantly. So, you know, a couple of stats here, right? The contactless payment as a category itself, 88% of all retail transactions in 2020 were contactless. That's a pretty big number. And you know, assuming that retail is, what, $25 trillion market globally, that's a huge chunk.
That's about speed and convenience though, right?
Oh, no, totally, totally. But all I'm saying is contactless as a category is preferable from a user perspective, right? Mm-hmm. Now, gesture-based interactivity as a part of that user flow, we fundamentally believe that it does, there is an opportunity for that touch point, or lack of a better word, gesture-based interactivity plays a part in the overall user journey. So let me give you an example. Some of the retailers that we are talking to are thinking about new and interesting ways to remove levels of friction from a user's in-store experience. So there are multiple technologies that are being trialed at the moment. You may have heard of Amazon's Just Walkout stores as one example. You know, you don't even have to take out your wallet, you know. And that is completely based on computer vision, as an example. But there are other retailers who are looking to use technology to better recognize who their loyal customers are. So think of, like, you know, we used to all have like loyalty cards, right? To, you know, whatever, Costco or any other retailer. They're removing that friction to say, okay, when you walk through the door and you're at the you've done your shopping and you're at the payment counter, we can recognize who you are. And if we recognize who you are, we can give you an offer at the, you know, last mile. And in that scenario, they are integrating gesture as part of the completely contactless flow. So this is where I think we are gaining some traction. There is a product that we are a part of that hasn't been announced yet. I can't go into details specifically on who it is and when it's going to be released, but we are part of a computer vision-based, fully automated checkout system that uses gesture as sort of the last mile for, you know, confirmation and things of that nature. So that's where we are gaining traction. Overall point here is that we are focusing on really showcasing and delivering value on how can you do certain things in a more natural and intuitive way. Mm-hmm. So think of like digital wayfinding at malls, right? You have these giant screens that are traditionally touch screens, right? But when you think of that experience has a lot of friction in it, because first of all, you can't use touch as effectively on a large screen, because, you know, you can't swipe from, you know, left to right to turn a map, as an example, right? We fundamentally believe that that product could be better with gesture, right? You can use gesture to, you know, zoom in, zoom out, rotate a map, find a, you know, direction to a store. Those kinds of things can be augmented. That experience can be augmented with adding gesture capability as opposed to using a touchscreen based interface. So those are the high value use cases that we are focusing on.
So it's not really a case where you're saying, you know, basically you don't need a touchscreen overlay anymore for whatever you're doing, Mr. Client. You just use this instead. It's tuned to a particular use case in an application and scenario, as opposed to this is better than a touch overlay.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I think that is the mission that we are driving towards, which is we know that there is potentially a usability gap between, say, gesture in terms of where it's in its evolution than touchscreen. We are looking to bridge that gap and get to a point where we can show more productivity using gesture. Mm-hmm. And the point is that with our technology, and this is something that you referenced a second ago, you can turn any screen into a touchscreen. So you don't necessarily need a touchscreen, and then you can convert it to a gesture. You can convert any LCD screen to a interactive screen.
Right. So
there is some deep argument there as well.
What's the kit of parts? Like what are you adding?
Just a camera and a USB cable and some software.
And how, if you're using haptic feedback, how is that done?
So haptics is, we've got a commercially off the shelf product. So it's another accessory that gets added to the screen. However, then in that contains the camera in it. So you don't need an additional camera. Mm-hmm. So that also connects through external power and a USB back to the media player.
So as long as you've got a USB on the media player, you're good. And right now it's your platform is Windows based. Do you have Android or Linux?
Yeah, good question, Dave. So right now we are Windows based, but we know it's of strategic importance for us to enable support on additional platforms. So we are starting to do some work on that front. You'll hear from us some updates from us early next year on at least the hand tracking side of things being available on more platforms than just Windows.
How do the economics work? I suspect you get this question around, all right, if I bought a touch or added a touch overlay to a display, it's going to cost me X. If I use this instead, it's going to cost me Y. Kind of at parity, or is one a lot more than the other?
Yeah, it depends on screen size, Dave, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So the higher in screen size you go, the wider the gap is. I would say that for a 21 or 23 inch screen up, the economics are in our favor for a comparable system.
And are you constrained by size? Like I think of all the LED video walls that are now going into retail and public spaces and so on, and those aren't touch enabled. You really wouldn't want to do that in the great majority of cases. Mm-hmm. With this, in theory, you could turn a potentially fragile, please don't touch me, surface like that into an interactive surface. But are you constrained to only doing like a 55 inch canvas or anything?
So Lego as an example, so this will require a little bit of technical explanation. The Lego example that I talked about was targeted on, I would say, a large LED outdoor LED screen, right? Mm. So the concept here is that if you want one-to-one interactivity, so what do I mean by one-to-one interactivity? One-to-one interactivity is that basically when in our interface, when the user approaches the screen, there is an on-screen cursor that shows up, right? And that on-screen cursor is what is the control point for the user. Mm-hmm. Now, one-to-one interactivity, for us to achieve where the cursor is at the same height, I guess, or there's no parallax between where the finger is and where the cursor is. For that, you have to be connected or at the screen. And when you're connected at the screen, based on our current camera technology, we can control up to a 42 inch screen, okay, for one-to-one interactivity. But we've also been doing, showing examples where if you connect the cursor, if you connect the sensor to, slightly in front of the display, then you can cover a wider area. And we've been able to showcase examples of our technology being used on up to a 75 inch, LCD screen in portrait mode.
Right. And any larger than that, it's the scale gets a little wonky, right? Because you've got a person standing in front of a very large display, and it starts to get a little weird, distance. I guess.
Yeah, it's like putting a large TV in a small living room. It's that. So you need to be slightly further away because then it gets too overwhelming. And for that, we have worked with certain of our partners, and they've done some really interesting work, like this company called EDM, IDIUM. They built a pedestal.
Right. Yep.
And so pedestal encloses our tracking device, and that can be placed several feet from a large immersive canvas, like a, you know, LED wall, as an example, in a museum type activation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people can walk by and then they can control the whole screen with that pedestal slightly further away from the screen.
Right. So it's like a restaurant controller or something, except for a big LED display.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, controlling, it's like a trackpad.
You right.
Control, it's like a trackpad in front of the screen, but slightly further away.
Gotcha. All right. Time flew by, man. We're already deep into this. You were telling me before we hit record that your company will be at NRF, and you may also have people wandering around ISC. If people want to know more about your company, they go to ultraleap.com.
That's correct. Yeah, ultraleap.com. And we have all the information there. And David, it was great to talk to you, and thank you for the opportunity.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and maybe you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 69, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the archive and find hundreds of conversations with smart industry people. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 69 at 16-9.net. You'll find more than 8,000 posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. 16-9 is not a press release republishing mill like a lot of the stuff out there. If something makes it on 16-9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16-9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and the key one here is ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Check out all the curated and automated content available at ScreenFeed.com. 16-9, the blog, and the podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which does customer engagement solutions, most of that digital signage, for all kinds of businesses. You'll find them in the Tampa area and online at Spectrio. That's Spectrio.com. You'll find me working out of a sunny back room in my house, located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.